And she's like, well, you can't go in there. And so at that point, I said, I'm going to be back here next week. And if there's not something installed in there, I'm going to change my son's diaper on your desk right here where you're sitting.
Hey friends, welcome to another episode of Rerouting. This week, Tiffany and I talked to Chris Dodds. He runs Pine Hill Country Day School, a Montessori school in Fort Wayne, Indiana. And this is the very school where Olive had her education. If you've seen my son Janos and Olive play together, it would be a delight because they have a massive age gap, but the way they connect together is just amazing. And what I realized was the Montessori education that Olive was part of had a big influence in how she included him and involved him in all her activities. And so I was curious. I wanted to know a little bit more about what Montessori School stands for and how they make learning so much fun and play. And Chris was absolutely hilarious. Not only Chris talks about how to make learning fun in his school, but he joyfully reminiscences about his own days of changing diapers as a single dad. And this episode is also fun because Tiffany, Chris, and I compare our notes on how our parents had the talk that everybody dreads. And if you think you can be your child's best friend, this episode has some revelations for you. So I won't hold you back much longer. Sit back and enjoy, and I hope you have as much blast as we did.
So today we have Chris Dodds on our show. Chris, remind me, and we have to edit this part out because I'm not allowed to call him the headmaster. I think it was like so cool. And as like a single mom sending your kid to private school, I was like, my kid has a headmaster. It sounded so bougie and I loved it.
It just sounds so pretentious, like to me.
It was my favorite part.
When people ask me what I do, I say I work at Hill Country Day School. I very rarely say I'm the director. And if I had to have a title, it would be director. But one of my buddies actually coined something that I think I may run with, and that's Snack Lord, because I'm in charge of all the snacks. So
you are the Snack Lord of Pine Hill Country Day School. Yeah.
That may wind up on a business card someday.
Well, headmaster, director, Snack Lord, you definitely are a friend of Olive and I and have been around for part of our story. I always like to start with where you started and your childhood and what was that like? Tell us a little bit.
I had a wonderful childhood. My parents were divorced, but it had no bearing on my upbringing. In other words, they co-parented wonderfully. And then, yeah, I actually grew up with Pine Hill Country Day School since my mother had started in 1978. As long as I can remember, there's always been this school. And even in high school, I would volunteer there in the summer day camp. So I grew up with it. And my sisters and I have two sisters, one older and one younger. We can now easily say our whole life was watching our mother work and run the school. Like it was just her whole existence. That's what she did, nights and weekends. In the 70s, we were latchkey, you know, kids, like basically left to our own devices, or we were up at school. And then I, as I aged in high school and college, I literally had no interest in it, didn't even think about it. And did a myriad of jobs in the medical community and sales and this and that, and just had this epiphany in 1999 of what do I want to do? Like I'm 26, 27 years old, and like whatever I was doing at the time was not it. And I remember my mom saying many times, figure out what you want to do, figure out what you love to do, and then figure out how to get somebody to pay you to do it. That's the whole goal in life. And I say this to my kids all the time. Whatever you like to do, the hard part is identifying what you want to do. The easy part is trying to get somebody to pay you to do it. There it is, the whole goal. And I answered the question, I want to work with kids and I want to play music. I want to get paid to play music and I want to get paid to play with kids. So that was my introduction to it. And I started off as a preschool teacher. I went back to school for LED because I was a criminal justice major. I can't even tell you why.
You were? I have to laugh now because knowing you, I just find that absolutely hilarious.
I think for a hot minute, I thought I wanted to be a police officer, but
no.
Quickly, quickly realized, no, I don't.
If I got pulled over, I would want it to be by Chris Dodds, though.
So ironically, or coincidentally, I came from a sales job where I worked for a small family business. And I saw firsthand how usually the boss's kid is a turd that doesn't work very hard. And so I was like hyper conscious of being on time, never being labeled as the boss's kid. So that kind of helped me. But then ultimately, Olive obviously would remember, and you as well, Tiffany, Cindy McCarricker,
who was,
she actually trained me. And I remember my mom saying, if you want to figure out what to do, just copy Cindy. Whatever she's doing, just emulate her, and then you're doing it right. And Cindy is still working. She's the assistant director. She's been there for 24 years. She's still my, that's what I should be doing. That's what I should hold myself to. I probably will never attain that. But between my mom and Cindy, I had these two wonderful women train me on how to do this. And I probably will never be as good as them, but as long as I'm trying to get there.
I feel I want to get a bit more context too, because both of you know this school and I have little idea. So tell me a little bit more about this.
So this school, it's small by design, with a focus on, which all schools should have, a focus on play as development, a lot of freedom, a lot of free choice. In preschool, it's a 1-7 ratio, which is incredibly low. Most places don't have one teacher for every 7 students. Because of that, the academic expectations are high. We start multiplication in first grade. Like, all of our second graders can do long division. They can all tell time. They can all read chapter books. They can all use a dictionary. All of these things. But it all stems from our preschool with a 1-7 ratio. And that's been that policy for 41 years. As we just can't exceed that because it changes things. But ultimately, school should be fun. It should be fun. And most kids would they would rather be with us than at home. So the result is the kids really have no idea. They really don't have a clue of how hard they're working. And they're working their tails off. They just don't know it. And that really is the goal.
Some of the things, Deep, that I think really set Pine Hill Country Day School apart, and Olive and I were coming from, she was in a very traditional, and it was also a Christian-based preschool where we were having all sorts of issues that Olive had. I always had to have these meetings with the teachers, and we were having all these behavioral issues, and she just couldn't do anything. And then I felt like a failure because I'm like, what? She's 18 months, 2 years old. How are we already like having all these problems? And I went to Chris. Someone had introduced me, actually your sister, Jen, introduced me to you and to the school. And we came and toured, and it just felt really right. Like, kids were all playing with all sorts of different ages. They all commingle. There's a section in the day where they're learning with the same age group. And then the rest of the day, like, the little kids are learning from the older kids, and the older kids have the opportunity to reinforce their learning because they're teaching. They don't know they're teaching, they're playing, but they're all ultimately reinforcing all this learning. And when we got to Pine Hill, like, all of a sudden, Olive bloomed. She flourished. Like, she wasn't being squished into these boxes that she didn't fit in, and these rules and standards that she just couldn't abide by. And we went from me being afraid and having all these problems with this little tiny toddler to her just flourishing. Chris, do you want to talk a little bit more about some of those programs that really make you guys unique in your corner of the woods?
Yeah, I do. In Fort Wayne, most, if not all, private schools are religiously affiliated with a church or a doctrine. Because there is no religious doctrine provided throughout the day, it really allows us to pull from a pretty diverse. We have every year lots of Muslim families. Jewish, I mean, I say every imaginable skin tone, every imaginable religion, like, the whole schmear is represented, because while there's a time and place for church and religion, just not here. And the result is, like, even Jehovah's Witnesses seek us out because it's tough in Fort Wayne, Indiana to find a non-faith-based private school. And what the benefit is, we're in the middle of Multicultural Month. I don't know if you remember that. We did Africa Week, Asia Week. We were very sad. We had a Chinese family who had a Chinese restaurant in town. And so Asia Week was awesome every year because of the snacks that were provided. And when both of their kids graduated, we're like, what are we going to do? My favorite story is we had five Muslim families that said, hey, we'd like to provide a snack for Africa Week. We're like, awesome. And I think we were expecting a snack. And as the day comes and we see all these Muslim women, they were dressed in their traditional clothing, and we were not prepared for the multitude of catering trays that were coming in. We're all pressed to the window going, and it was the best day. We ate like kings. And it was because of that level of participation. A lot of times with first generation immigrants who send their children to us. And that's really one of our favorite aspects, because everybody knows this. No two children from different parts of the world or different skin tones or different religion ever really have a problem with each other. It's been true since the beginning of time. Kids are oblivious to, yes, they can identify differences, but it just doesn't matter. Your skin's dark, my skin's not, but that's it. That's as far as it goes. So it's wonderful. It's wonderful to have that participation.
Yeah, and for a place, you know, that has so many, it really is just like, I mean, we've talked about this before. It's just the middle of really, it's white, it's conservative, it's right wing for the most part. Like, but somehow you guys make it feel like you can almost forget where you are, because there are all these different types of families and it is so diverse. And it was really cool. And yeah, we love that. And it, like I said, just a gem in a place that you wouldn't expect something like that.
Now, I was just curious, religious acceptance and acceptance in general is one of the key virtues of the school. And I'm wondering, I sense that there's also something beyond that, which makes it interesting. And the reason, you know, I asked that is Tiffany told me that Chris is a guy who would play Beatles music in the class and teach kids more than just the mathematics or whatever subject. So I want to know more about that.
Music is a huge, huge part. And that also stems from my mother, Lainey. She was a guitar player and played and sang with the kids. And like on a normal year, kids learn about 60 to 80 songs that we would give singing performances, not only in school, but we do a lot of community service field trips where we go and sing to the elderly or the infirmed, rehab places. And we use music as a reward. If everybody is working, everybody is quiet, yeah, we can play some music. And actually, our second graders do a year-long U.S. geography project, you know, obviously all 50 states. And state capitals, and it started of, could they do their state capitals? But that has now turned into, they know their state capitals, they know the largest city, they know the nickname, they know the abbreviation, and they know what each state is generally known for. So as we go through that throughout the year, any song that has anything to do with Georgia, that's played for that you know, the next few days. Certain states don't have a whole lot, there's not too many songs about Kansas or South Dakota. So you have some states that are kind of tough, but then like when you get to Louisiana, now all of our kids have been bugging their parents about playing Zydeco music, which is, you know, Cajun music, that sort of thing. So like one of the questions, and at the end of the year, obviously California, you could play songs for 3 weeks because there's so many to choose from. But at the end, like one of the questions, they have to take a 102 long question oral exam at the end. And I'll give you guys a sample question. What is the largest city in the state that is south of the Beehive State?
What is the Beehive State?
That's Utah.
Oh, okay. Clearly.
And why?
Clearly. Because of the Mormons.
Okay.
Do they have a lot of beehives? No.
Their work ethic when they were there developing that, they were as busy as bees. It's called, and it's obviously a huge Mormon, but the state, so now they have to go, okay, the Beehive State is, Utah. That's actually the easiest part for them. Now they have to visualize in their head by, you know, remembering their map. Okay. Arizona, that's probably the toughest leap. But once they get Arizona, they don't, well, it's Phoenix. Mm. It's fun stuff like that. Now, this is the best part. At the end of the year, after they get their results, and our highest score on that was a 98 out of 102, but the parents get sent home their test, the identical test, and the kids get to hold their parents' phone so they can't cheat, and the parents have to take the check. And we have never had a parent beat their kid yet. It'll happen, but not yet.
Most parents. Wow. I like that.
Wow. Yeah.
And so like, this is all the stuff that should be fun. And obviously we're able to do a lot of this because of the low ratio and the low numbers, but to have a child going home excited about telling their, I once had a kid get in trouble at home because he asked his mom this quiz question: what's the only U.S. state capital that shares no letters of its capital with the state it's in? Meaning they share no letters. There's only one. But I had told him, like, listen, ask your mom that question, but don't tell her the answer. Like, she'll have to find it on her own. And he got in trouble because the mom was so furious that she wouldn't just tell her the answer. And I won't tell you guys the answer either, but there is only one state capital that shares no letters of the state it's in. So you guys will have to find it.
Oh, Chris, you and I have talked a lot about how parenting has changed since we were raised. And you grew up in the 70s versus now you're raising your kids. Can you give me a little bit of this, just the contrast and kind of the differences that you see?
Yes. And I'll come at it from a father's point of view, which is all I can do. But I tell like guys that I know, younger guys that are like just having babies or their wives are pregnant. What I say to them is you have now chosen the best time in the history of fatherhood to be a father. And for a couple of reasons, our fathers, at least in America, our fathers and our grandfathers were cheated out of the experience of raising kids because of the societal norms. In the 70s, you couldn't push a stroller down the street. You couldn't carry a diaper bag in the 1940s. Most men weren't even in the room when the kids were born. So what I've said is you can do anything short of lactating. There is nothing a father can't do. That's it. You can do anything. And Deep and I were talking prior that I was a single father with a 6-month-old. So that I'm sure colors my approach, but it still holds true with even if you have a partner. There's nothing you can't do short of breastfeeding. Hmm. And because now it is socially acceptable for a man to change diapers, a man to have a diaper bag with all kinds of stuff in it, like that diaper bag was attached to my back for years. Tiffany will appreciate this. I'm the reason why Glenbrook Mall, do you remember Glenbrook?
Yeah, obviously.
Jax and I are the reason why they got diaper changing stations in the men's rooms.
No way.
I went there. Yes. Because
in your school?
No, like a local shopping mall.
Wow.
I don't know what you guys.
It's like the mall. No, it's a mall. Yeah.
Okay. So Jax and I were there. And of course, he's, I don't know, 18 months, if that, maybe younger. And of course, just fills up his diaper. I go to the men's room, which is right across from the management office. And I walk into the men's room and nowhere to change a diaper or the floor. So I walk across the hall and I say, hey, there's no diaper changing station in the men's room. And the poor old lady that was in there goes, well, one in the women's room. Okay. Are you going to watch the door while I walk into the women's room to change my son's diaper? And she's like, well, you can't go in there. And so at that point I said, I'm going to be back here next week. And if there's not something installed in there, I'm going to change my son's diaper on your desk right here where you're sitting. And that's probably maybe extreme, but I was very I was very mad. How dare you say there's one in the women's room? But I can't go in the women's room.
That's so useless. Yeah.
I went back the next week and sure enough, there was the one.
Nice.
It's slow, but it's changing. And I think it's the best time to be a father. Like Deep, you pick the best time to have a 5-year-old because you can do anything.
I get it. And, you know, I think this has only accelerated through the COVID times, right? There has been so much fluidity between work and family time and just getting to see the kid grow up much closely is, for me, I tell Tiffany, it's been the silver lining for this whole thing. It's been a blessing. And that's caused a lot of awareness in me, just all the things that I was missing out on, all the things that I was just kind of leaving out for the schools, to his mother, to parent him. I think I had to step up during this time. So you're right. I totally get you.
You know, Chris, on the flip side of that coin, we've also discussed how parenting in this generation has become a verb, something you do, versus when our parents were raising us, it was just something they were. And like you had mentioned before, latch key kids. And Deep, I don't know if you know what a latch key kid is, but basically it's kids that would just go home after school and there was a key under the rock or something and they let themselves in and there was no after school or hort, as it's called here, or daycare for things like that. You got done with school and you went home and hung out by yourself until your parents got home. Or in your case, Chris, played out in the alley.
Yes. Yeah. Very small supervision, next to no supervision in the 70s and 80s for kids. We were just like feral wild cats. We could just, as long as we were home for dinner, that's because Americans, that's all that matters is you are home for dinner and you clean your plate. So, you know.
Yep. Oh, Chris, please talk about your incident that you had and the differences between parents now and parents then and how they dealt with it.
So yeah, our playground in our neighborhood was our back alley, garbage cans and light poles and people who cut through. People that didn't live there would cut through roaring down our alley. But we grew up playing out there and I got hit by a car. I vividly remember the big chrome bumper coming at my head because I slid to try to get out of the way. And my older sister was there and all the neighborhood kids. And anyways, the response from all the parents, they all came eventually running down. But the response from my mom was, if it still hurts in the morning, then we'll go to the hospital. Let's just see if it still hurts. What if it doesn't? Yeah. And I remember going, okay. And you know what I did? I went to bed, which is the exact opposite of what you're supposed to do when you have a concussion. So I have my head hit by this bumper and the response is, let's put you to bed. If it still hurts tomorrow, then we'll go to the hospital. That encapsulates the 70s for me.
Mm.
Yeah. Everybody was more street smart and parents were probably more. Can you imagine a group of parents in the 70s discussing the amount of water intake their kids were having at school?
No way.
Just wouldn't happen.
I get that.
And so as an educator who's on like the other side of these types of conversations, what is your thought on that?
I recently had a conversation with a mom. Part of our job is sometimes to modify behavior. It's not just academic. Mm. Socialization, all of these things, learning to share, wait in line or listen to presentations. These are all learned behaviors. None of us are born with them.
Mm-hmm.
So I was just telling a mom that, hey, listen, there was a behavioral issue that warranted calling the mom just to address it, that we're on the same page. But then she was asking questions of, has there been anything else? And what I said to her was, listen, our job is to modify undesirable behavior to modeled behavior. And I'm not going to call you on every little ticky-tacky thing. Billy grabbed this game away from another child. Do I need to call a parent for that? No, it's our job. It's our job to make that a teachable moment, work with those kids. And I think there are some parents that would want to know every little thing. Oh, so-and-so cut in front of my child. What did you guys do about it? Well, I didn't call you because that wasn't necessary. So that, yeah, I can see your point, Deep, that because the level of involvement in parenting is so much more now, I can see it getting bogged down with some of the minutiae, and especially with social media and the access that people have to, like you said, like a group chat. I'm sure it could snowball into much more than it probably ever was before or ever needed to be. Yeah, it's different times, different parents. I will say this, just in the 21 years I've been there, there is a distinct decline in kids being able to hold a pencil. They just can't write as good as they used to, at least at the appropriate age. Kids cannot tie their shoes. That was a requirement for kids to tie their shoes in kindergarten when I was young.
Yeah, I remember that. I think, I don't know about for Olive, but I know for me for sure.
Yeah, it's most kids, I would say most first and second graders, even now have trouble with it or don't know how. Parenting, focus on parenting has changed and altered as it does with every generation. But there are noticeable differences just in even my short time of being there. And a lot of that is, unfortunately, even though we're using technology now to talk across the Atlantic Ocean from each other, it's that technology that is really, I think, a detriment to a lot of kids. So Tiffany was saying that on Saturday mornings, Olive will sneak out because she gets to watch TV. We had the same thing here. No TV Monday through Thursday, no iPads. The result is on the weekends, that's all they want to do because they didn't get to do it all week. But I would say that one of my favorite aspects of Pine Hill is we do have one iPad so that we can stream something if need be. But you're not going to see a bank of computers. You're not going to see kids with tablets. You're going to see glue and tape and scissors and recyclables that they can build stuff. And we're very low tech by design. And it makes me sound old, but the worst thing for kids is a tablet or an iPhone. It's just, it's soul sucking.
No, so. I totally agree. And I tend to be the really uncool parent in this scenario. I remember, so like when Olive is with a friend, no TV, no iPad, like you're with someone, you can entertain each other. That's the whole point, play.
Right.
And we, and obviously like never at a dinner table, we were out to eat once with several friends who also had kids. So there were like four or five kids at the table and all said, "Mom, can I have your phone?" And I said, "What are you talking about? Absolutely not." And I looked up and every other kid was on a phone. And I thought, shit, like,
why are we here?
And how am I supposed to tell her no? That sucks for her. Like, what, she's just supposed to sit in color like the only child she is? That's the whole point of being out with people. But I've always felt like, oh gosh, maybe I need to lighten up on that a little. Maybe I need to be the cooler parent. But actually, it's been reinforced with, there have been documentaries on Netflix, every book that I read, every executive in Silicon Valley that does something with technology, you ask them the rules for their children and they're like, oh no, absolutely not. Absolutely not. And I'm like, okay, if these people agree, then like, I'm gonna stick with this because it is what in my gut and in my soul feels is right, that I want her to learn how to socialize in the world. And I think that she will learn how to use technology as she gets older and she'll be fine. She's not going to be behind or miss out. And yeah, maybe there are kids who learn to code when they're 7 or 8 and they become some master genius and fantastic. But for me, I've always felt that. And I actually remember that now about Pine Hill. That was another one of the things that for me was so important.
Yeah, I sound like an old man when I say, oh, technology is the worst. But with small kids, we've all seen it. There's zombies.
Yeah. It's great to hear from you on the side of an educator and the way parents are, the way parents can support educators. But on the parenting side, we all have failures and we're also learning from those. And so I'm curious if you could share with us a failure that you've really learned from.
I wouldn't say this was a failure, but it was definitely a learning experience. My wife and I were at the dinner table and it's wrapping up, and our daughter, Posey, announces that she wants to have the talk.
And how old is Posey?
She's 9.
She wants to have the talk.
And your first initial response is, okay, but listen, we're going to own it. We're going to do it the right way, because so many of our parents didn't want to talk about it because it's uncomfortable. So we're going to do it and we're going to be awesome. Okay. So you know how we've always said that you were in your mommy's belly, and we're going to use clinical terms. So you did not come out of your mom's belly. You came out through the vagina. And how babies are made. And this is how graphic we're like, the male's penis goes into the vagina and inseminates. And the look on her face is just like horror. And we're like, this is the talk. This is what we're talking about. This is how babies are made. And this is how you came into this world. So what do you think? And this is obviously a longer drawn out process, and just this horrible look on her face. And we're like, what are your thoughts? And she says, I thought the talk was about Santa Claus and whether he was real or not. April and I just look at each other and we're like, holy shit, what do we just do? We just traumatized this girl.
I was like, really, Posey? You couldn't open with that? Like,
right. Well, talk about rerouting. But like, now, when presented with these situations, we're going to ask some questions. Like, what do you think? That was a parenting and educator fail on both of our parts. of just going, yes, our time has come to make this talk, and we're going to be awesome. All we're going to talk about was Santa Claus. So
after the trauma of that, did you continue on to traumatize her about Santa? Or was this a double trauma day, or did we decide that's enough?
I think that was enough. That was enough for her and us. So as it stands now, she knows every minute detail on the reproductive process, but still think Santa Claus.
Fantastic. And that's what childhood is all about, my friend.
That's a win.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So.
Oh, yeah. Talk about rerouting. And we've talked a little bit about like our parents versus us. What was, like you said you wanted to do it differently than your parents. What was your experience with the talk with your parents?
My parents weren't together and at that time lived in separate cities. So my dad came into town unexpectedly, about a 3-hour drive, and to pick me up, which I always knew when he was coming. So he picks me up, and I'm like, I think I'm 12, and we get in the car. What are we doing, Dad? And he's like, oh, we're just going on a drive, and he's uncomfortable. He's got some sweat. He's just doing this. We're driving around Fort Wayne, and I'm looking at him in the passenger seat. Are you all right? And his spiel went like this. Son, you know how a man and a woman can get married. Yeah? Yeah, Dad. Okay. You know how a man can't marry a man. And this is the 80s. I'm like, yeah? Good talk, son. Good talk, son. Turns around, drops me back off, and drives back to Detroit. And looking back, I know why it occurred. Obviously.
Yeah.
Obviously, my mom had said, you need to come down here and you need to have this talk with your son. So obviously, he was pressed into service to do it. Didn't want to do it.
Yeah.
And his only sex talk was, a man can marry a woman and a man can't marry a man, which he's of that generation. That's enough. That was all I needed to know, I guess.
At least you had your dad come down and talk. I had my uncle who was summoned by my dad to have the talk with me.
Because your uncle did it?
Yeah, because he was younger enough. You know, I could relate to him. My dad didn't do that.
But is it also because your dad did not want to do it?
Yeah. For additional context, I grew up in India and this is still 90s, and we didn't have an open talk about that, and I was about to leave for Singapore. I was 16 and it was just too quick for him. It was a sudden decision, and so he didn't want to have that conversation. And I remember very clearly we had some tenants, some very nice people who lived above our house and in the second floor. They were very friendly, and he was a young guy. He was recently married, and my dad must have asked him to have that conversation with him about the talk, as you guys call it, the intimacy and the contacts and all that stuff. So I remember having that great conversation about internet. It's such a wild thing. You get good stuff and you get bad stuff. And yeah, I'm forgetting the details, but I remember it wasn't my dad. It was our neighbor.
On a scale of 1 to 10, what was the, like knowing what you know now, like on a scale of 1 to 10, what was the accuracy like level with all of this?
I don't think we went into details until the internet started serving me the details.
He was mentioning the internet and you're like, maybe I can find the answers there. It sounds like it.
Exactly. And you got to know that was 95, 96, or maybe 7. And the internet was there, but it wasn't really open for us in India. And Singapore was a different story. Yeah. I had to fight it out.
So the general strategy on my side was radio silence. Just radio silence. And then, of course, whatever was preached to me at church, which that message is don't. Like, don't. Mm-hmm. And so then in eighth, so like I knew nothing, but my mom still like signed all the permission slips. So like, yeah, the health teacher can tell you whatever she needs to tell you, whatever she's presenting that day in class. And so I remember sitting and there was a day we were going to watch this like video and everybody was like, oh, it's the video. Okay, great. This is it. I'm going to know like why everybody else knows. And they played it and it was incredibly graphic. And the vantage point was even from like the inside and the act and it was not a very long video for whatever reason. And I remember they turned it off and I sat there like totally unsure of what I just witnessed, looked at the girl next to me who was also the same age and only in eighth grade. And I said, what just happened? And she got all red she obviously understood it and was like, well, I'm not explaining it to you, and just started giggling. And so here I sat, I was like, I still don't know anything. I don't understand, like nothing. Yeah, I too have tried very hard to go the honesty route. And luckily every time like Off has asked me like a little question, I just get real brave. Like at first I'm panicked and then I'm like, okay, take a breath. Just answer very honestly. And I do. And then typically she responds with, ew. And there are no more questions for several months to several years. And it's been.
There's a lot waiting for you, Deep. There's a lot coming down the pike. You'll get to do. Learn from my mistake.
No, thank you. I was going to say that. Thanks for sharing that failure. I think it's going to happen much sooner, in my opinion, than it happened for you or for at least definitely for me.
You always believe that you have more time. That's for sure. And then it happens and you're like, oh no, I thought I had more time. And you never do. It happens. Yeah. You always thought you had more time.
Chris, you mentioned something in the beginning and I just quickly want to cover that because it's been in my mind and I'm just curious to know, you mentioned about co-parenting and your parents were divorced. And you said you had a healthy relationship as a family still, as co-parents. What was it like? What had worked back then? How did they make it happen?
It was probably not the norm back then. Yeah, my parents were married for 14 years before getting divorced when I was 4. So I only have like vague mental snapshots of them together. I don't really have any rock solid, oh, I remember this, and then they got divorced, and now we're separate, which I think all in all is a benefit. I do feel that older children whose parents get divorced have a much rougher go of it because they have two things to compare to. And like my oldest son, 6 months old, he has no awareness of life before or after, or of marriage dissolving. So I actually, it never occurred to me that anything was wrong. Whatever struggles or squabbles my parents had, which I'm sure they did, were out of my hemisphere. I never knew it. My dad would come into town, even in my stepmother, who I love tremendously. My stepmother and my mom were friends. We were all able to do family functions, birthdays, stuff like that together. And so here I find myself in a similar situation as an adult. And it's certainly not easy to co-parent with an ex, so to speak. And a lot of times as a lot of us wouldn't want to do it that way, but that was to my parents' credit. I wasn't aware that there was anything abnormal. And I had a lot of friends, especially in high school, who would say stuff like, gosh, you're so lucky your parents don't live together, because their parents were like horribly fighting in front of them, maybe a toxic, so there's no
people
nobility.
Sticking it out because they felt because like they had to. Because the kids, now it's way better for them.
Yeah, so that was, and my parents were both disciplinarians, obviously Laney in education. My dad was a colonel in the army. This is the way it's done. Both of them were, and we're all products of our environment. We all, whether we want to admit it or not. So in the process of parenting and in the classroom, it's harder to be stricter later if you don't set the tone right away. You can always ease up. You can always relent or, hey, I'll allow it this time. It's harder to be stricter later. So you start off strict, or at least with guidelines. Even in the classroom, the first day of school, and the second graders have obviously heard it from the year before of, here are the expectations. We work hard. We're going to have a lot of fun, but this is what I expect. Da, 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 da. And then as the year goes on, I can say, you know what, you guys can pack it up, put your stuff away. We'll do some Mad Libs or whatever. Or we'll go outside this. And I think that's true. It should be true of parenting at home. You can always ease up. You can always say yes to something that you would normally not to, but it's harder. It's harder to all of a sudden try to become stricter or rein it in later. Because it very rarely works that way.
Yeah, and
there's a difference between being a parent and trying to be your kid's friend.
Yeah. Is that even possible? Like,
a lot of people try. Yeah. I have a lot of friends who they don't want to say no to their child, or they don't want to do this because they don't want their child to be mad at them. That's not good parenting. Yes, you want to have a good relationship with your kids, but you're not their friend. You're their parent, and there is a difference.
I have to say, with Olive, from time to time, I've struggled with that line because I was really young when I had her, and we were growing up together. I always, from very early, I knew that she was a person who really needed to see boundaries. And there have been times every now and then when, oh God, I've heard myself say it, and I hated hearing it, but I knew I had to. Like, I am not your friend. Sorry, but like you're forgetting. I am not your friend. I'm your mother. And that's how it works. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, ugh, it makes me want to throw up. I hate hearing it. But like, you're so right. You have to. You just have to.
Now, you guys are confusing me. I grew up in India, you know, watching American series. Gilmore Girls. We talked about that, Tiffany, once.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I can't tell you how many times we've been compared to the Gilmore Girls. Yeah.
Now, like, you know, I always thought cool parents are the best friends with kids. But now I get to hear from you.
The later seasons of the Gilmore Girls where she is really pumping the brakes, drawing the lines.
Yeah, I feel there's so much to talk about, but Chris, I know that we're cutting close to the time. You have to go and get some important deal done. Thank you so much. Any parting words?
Deep, it was great meeting you. I hope I get to talk with you and at least get updates. I look forward to seeing you again.
Likewise, and have a beautiful day.
Thank you as well.
Bye.
Hey guys, we hope you're enjoying the show. If you haven't already, head over to reroutingpod.com and sign up for the newsletter. Subscribers receive exclusive updates from Deep and I and are the first to know when there's a new episode out. That's reroutingpod.com. Enter your email and we'll make sure you don't miss a thing.